The Arctic is not just a remote, icy place. It is a thriving but fragile ecosystem that supports people, marine life, and animals in a delicate balance that is being increasingly challenged by a changing climate, resource extraction interest, and growing numbers of vessels transiting a shorter route from Asia to the East Coast. Who helps decide what the future should be for this region? We'll talk to researchers involved with planning the next 5 years and beyond today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Does someone in Boston or Baja California or Paris care about what happens in the Arctic? Should they? The Arctic system has been called the world's thermostat, and no matter where you live on the planet, what happens in the Arctic impacts your life. Our studio guests today are Professor Diane Hirschberg. Dr. Hirschberg is the director for the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research for ICER, the Institute for Social and Economic Research, based at the University of Anchorage, of Alaska Anchorage. Welcome, Dr. Hirschberg.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Also, Carolina Behe will be joining us in the studio soon. Carolina is the Indigenous Knowledge and Science Advisor for the Inuit Circumpolar Council, ICC Alaska, and she will be joining us in just a few moments. We also have on the phone with us Dr. Robert Rich. Dr. Rich is the Executive Director for the Arctic Resource Consortium of the United States, ARCUS. There's lots of acronyms flying around here. So, Dr. Hirschberg, this coming Friday, there is a day-long event at UAA called the Anchorage Day of Arctic Research. You're going to be there. Dr. Rich will be there. Lots of other people will be there. You're bringing in people from many places for this. It's open to the public. What can people expect to learn if they spend the day immersed in these sessions? Kind of walk us through what will be happening.
Well, we're really excited at UAA to be hosting this Arctic Research Day. And it was actually Bob Rich who approached us saying, let's do this. The idea is a lot of people think about Arctic research in the state being based at Fairbanks. And certainly the University of Alaska Fairbanks is a leading institution internationally for Arctic research. But what they don't realize is the extent to which there is a very vibrant Arctic research community right here in Anchorage. And it's both the university and in the public, nonprofit, indigenous, and private entities that are based in Anchorage. So the idea of the day is to bring us together and share a snapshot of the different Arctic research that's happening across the natural sciences, the social sciences, arts and humanities, projects that are academic in their focus, that are policy in their focus, and see if we can not only share a broader understanding of what's happening in this community, but also make some new connections, because even I, as I was putting this together with my colleagues at ARCUS and IARPIC for another acronym we'll talk about in a minute, I really didn't, and I don't think I still have wrapped my head around how many people in this community are doing this good work.
All right. I think we're going to be joined now by Carolina. Hello. That's great that she showed up. I wasn't expecting her quite so soon, so I'm so happy that you were able to make it. And I want to get Dr. Rich in here. As I said earlier at the beginning, Dr. Robert Rich is the Executive Director for the Arctic Research Consortium of the United States, ARCUS. And Dr. Rich, I want to ask you a little bit about ARCUS's work. But first, you'll be here for Friday's research day. What will your role be?
Well, I'm really excited to be able to be part of the Anchorage Arctic Research Day at UAA. We at ARCUS are basically an organization dedicated to making connections across boundaries in support of Arctic research through communication, coordination, and collaboration. And at the Anchorage Arctic Research Day on Friday, our plan is to support that kind of networking, that kind of connecting, that kind of interaction between researchers and stakeholders that is really so possible here in a place like Anchorage, where there is so much Arctic-related research going on.
Let's get Carolina Behe in here, too. Carolina joined us just a moment ago, and as I said in the opening, she is the Indigenous Knowledge and Science Advisor for the Inuit Circumpolar Council, ICC Alaska. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is ICC Alaska's role in Friday? And then I want to talk more broadly about the five-year plan and your work with Arctic communities. But what's the role coming for Friday's event?
Well, for Friday, we were invited to come give a five-minute presentation of the work that ICC Alaska is engaged in. And just like Rob, his organization, we're very interested in all of the work that's happening in Alaska. It's very difficult to get a roadmap kind of view of everything that everybody's doing in the Arctic, let alone in Anchorage. So it'll be a really good event for that.
You can join our conversation, too, if you have questions about Arctic science. What do you think the plan for the Arctic's future should contain? What should it look like, and who should get to decide it? You can call statewide 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email questions to talk@alaskapublic.org. Carolina, you said something that I want to go back to, which is trying to coordinate everything that's happening in the Arctic. And, you know, we've got some of the folks, you are in the studio here with Dr. Hirschberg, we've got Dr. Rich on the phone. So we've got U.S. components of what's happening in the Arctic, a few of those representatives. But how difficult is it to coordinate with other nations? There's a lot of Arctic nations, and how does that work? How successful are you at coordinating other research efforts and other things? Maybe let's start with you, Carolina, and then we'll talk with Dr. Hirschberg and Dr. Rich. You're working with Inuit communities, Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. How is that to coordinate these things?
So it's a really good question, and the coordination is improving, I would say, internationally quite a bit. What's still a challenge is recognizing the need to cross scales, meaning from there's work being done by our own communities, and that work needing to be acknowledged and also connected to those international initiatives. But in more in general to your direct question about international engagement, ICC is also one of the permanent participants for the Arctic Council, which of course is about coordinating research activities, but maybe more not just research activities, but bringing information together that has been resulted from those activities. But there's also huge objectives right now with like the DBO that has multiple countries coming together, like oceanographic data being shared from Japan with the U.S. and so on. And a lot more of that coordination needs to take place. And the U.S. has given quite a commitment in the last couple of years to trying to make some of that coordination occur.
Well, you brought up an interesting point and an important point, too, that ICC is a permanent participant. So when the chairmanship changes, as it just did or just is now.
In May.
Okay. In May to, is it?
Finland.
Finland. Okay. I almost said Norway. Finland. What happens when that chairmanship, and maybe this is a question for you, mm-hmm. Dr. Hirschberg or Dr. Rich, either one of you or both of you can jump in here. What happens when the chairmanship changes? Do you have to sort of start over with some things? I mean, it's when you have permanent participants, that would indicate to me that you can keep some continuity with research and programs, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But when you're changing chairmanships from countries, what are the protocols then for continuing on?
Right. Well, so I sit on the Council for the International Arctic Social Sciences Association, which again is another one of these international research coordinating bodies. And we are observers to the Arctic Council meetings. So I've been attending Arctic Council meetings for the last 2 years. And there's the Arctic Council, which meets either with senior Arctic officials or when this big changeover, the handover happens in May in Fairbanks, you actually get equivalents of the Secretary of State coming and or hopefully coming and passing the baton. But the work of the Arctic Council is done by working groups. There's six working groups, and they cover a broad array of natural science and kind of community social science issues. Those projects are on anything from 1 year to 5 year timelines. And so some of those I was just at the Sustainable Development Working Group, and they've got a 2 year plan moving forward, but they've also got projects that they are continuing to bring along, as well as some that have finished under the current chairmanship. And the permanent participants, the international indigenous organizations, also play a very important role with these other entities like IASA that I'm on the council of. So we always have a permanent participant member of our council. And when we do big projects like the Arctic Human Development Report, which is it's a decennial report, we always have permanent participants that are involved both in the research process and in the governance, kind of in making sure that the way we're framing questions and doing the work makes sense and engages the peoples of the Arctic in the ways that they should be engaged in this work.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing the future of the Arctic and who should be involved in making those decisions about what the Arctic policy should look like, and who should help decide that future. You can join our conversation if you have questions or comments, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255 statewide, or in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Dr. Robert Rich is on the phone with us from Washington, D.C. He is the executive director for ARCUS, the Arctic Research Consortium of the United States. Dr. Rich, in this conversation about moving from one country, it's a two-year chairmanship that countries have. The U.S. is transitioning out now, and Finland will take over. The U.S. this is the second time the U.S. has chaired the Arctic Council. When a new country comes in, we're talking about continuity. Do they have like some big ideas for what they want to see happen, or is there a real concerted effort to keep continuity going forward with what's already in place?
Yeah, so I think the important observation to make about the Arctic Council is that all of the decision making is done by consensus of all of the members, and so there are eight Arctic nations that sit on the Arctic Council, and all eight of them need to agree for the Arctic Council to do something. So basically, it is really a very collaborative environment, and so who's the chair? I'm not going to say it's entirely ceremonial, but it is probably less influential than sort of where is the community of nations in the Arctic and permanent participants in the Arctic as a whole, where are they going? So, with the changeover from the United States to Finland has some new priorities. I believe that one of the Finnish priorities is to support science and engineering education. Another one is to support environmental protection and so forth, as the U.S. had its priorities for its chairmanship. But basically, many of the priorities are very similar, and many of the initiatives going on through the working groups of the Arctic Council are multi-year efforts that transcend multiple chairmanships.
All right, thanks for that. We're talking about the future of the Arctic today. You can join us, 1-800-478-8255 statewide. 1-800-478-8255 in Anchorage. The number is 550-8422. There's a lot of acronyms, as we acknowledged earlier, associated with this work. The IARPIC, did I say that right?
Yes.
All right. Great. Mm-hmm. The IARPC is the Interagency Arctic Research Policy Committee, and it's comprised of numerous federal agencies and others. The five-year Arctic Research Plan extends, the new plan started this year. It extends until 2021. There's four main policy objectives and nine research goals. I want to kind of walk through the policy areas first. Number one is enhance the well-being of Arctic residents. That's a broad statement. What is its intent and how is it being addressed? Who wants to tackle that?
Okay.
All right. Carolina, let's start with you.
Well, the process of developing the research plan requires collaboration with the governor, state of Alaska, with communities, with the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. And so the interpretation of those policies really has to do with working backwards from what everybody identified as needs to be addressed. But it's also based only off of federally funded programs or federally funded research. So that research is put down as the performance elements, and those performance elements are addressing some of those policy issues. So when we talk about the nine research objectives, that's what gets allocated to each one of the collaboration teams. Each one of those collaboration teams has performance elements that directly tie back to that policy element. So if that policy element is health, health and well-being, then there's a health and well-being group that has performance elements that have to do with things from contaminants in food to suicide and alcohol and drug use and multiple other ones. But also the Coastal Resilience Group has performance elements that have to do with shifts in hunting practices and how that affects people's food security. Or the Marine Ecosystem Group has performance elements that have to do with looking at connections between marine mammal migration patterns, shifts in migration patterns as it connects to sea ice and other pieces. That's also connected to human health and well-being in the Arctic as a key food source and safety point.
Dr. Rich, I know that you were ready to say something there. Tell us what you interpret that to mean, the well-being of Arctic residents.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of different dimensions of this, and you know, health is so integrally tied into the entire Arctic system. Whether we're talking about cultural impacts of environmental changes or intrinsic difficulties in access or infrastructure or cost distances, so all of these factors, I think, are part of what's being considered here in terms of health. One point I make in general about the collaboration teams in IARPC is that these teams are composed of not just federal officials, but also a variety of other stakeholders, including Carolina is actually one of the co-chairs of one of the collaboration teams on coastal resilience.
All right, 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you have questions or comments about the future of the Arctic. 1-800-478-8255 statewide or 550-8422, 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. The second area for the main policy objectives is to advance stewardship of the Arctic environment. I know that there's been a lot of discussion through the years about making sure that there's baseline studies, understanding where things were in the advent of facing great change in the Arctic. There's been great change happening in the Arctic for a long time. It seems as if a lot of people that are Inuit people, Arctic peoples, understand that and probably have for much longer than a lot of other people in the world have finally acknowledged that, yes, change is happening quite quickly in the Arctic. Where are we with that sort of understanding? I know that there's always more that needs to be done, but Dr. Hirschberg, maybe you can weigh in here and then we'll move to Dr. Rich as well. As far as baseline understanding of what's happening in the systems, this fragile ecosystem in the Arctic, how much is done? How much more needs to be done? Where are we at with kind of walking through these research areas?
Well, and of course, I'm a social scientist, not a natural scientist, so I'm looking much more at how people are responding to the changes. What we're seeing, I believe, is a lot of, there's a lot of understanding of changes happening, that change is accelerating. There's a lot of surprise at how fast change is accelerating. And I think a lot of scientists are trying to wrap their hands around. We predict whether it's open shipping lanes or it's what's happening to our fisheries and or migratory bird species. We're seeing the change happen much more rapidly than people anticipated. One of the interesting conversations that's happening is how much do we need to be focusing on trying to the science of slowing this down versus the science of adaptation. Mm. Because the feeling is no matter how much we reduce our carbon output, we're going to have change that's going to continue for decades and probably centuries. So what does it mean now to adapt to this change? And that is both on the ecological, environmental level and also on the human level. And I think when we talk about stewardship of the Arctic environment, that's part of the challenge here is, again, the question you ask, who should be making these decisions and how should they be made? And that is really contentious and really difficult right now.
Dr. Rich, are there areas that you have most concern about that we don't know? I know that it's such a vast area of research and there's so much that needs to be done and it's difficult to get there and expensive. But are there certain areas that stand out more to you than others that there's just not enough known yet? And it's critical to get those baseline studies done before there's more vessel traffic and there's more development in those areas. What are you most concerned about?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the key things that we do, ARCUS is a consortium of the research institutions around the world that do Arctic research. We've got a project that we're the project office for called the Study of Environmental Arctic Change, or SEARCH for short, yet another acronym. And within the SEARCH project, we have five areas where there are particular focus studies trying to develop the right questions, trying to understand what we know and figure out where we need to learn more. And those five key areas that we've tagged are in terms of the sea ice, the changing levels of ice, distribution of ice throughout the year. You may have heard about the record low sea ice extent that we have had in recent years. The second one is in terms of the Greenland ice sheet and understanding how quickly that's melting. The third is in terms of permafrost, looking at the carbon released from permafrost, the effect of permafrost changes on infrastructure and ecosystems. The fourth point is coastal resilience. How can communities, like Shishmaref or Kivalina, for example, deal with some of the changes that are going on in their environment? And the fifth one is in terms of the future, looking longer term, 30 to 50 years out, what is the future of the Arctic going to be?
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So I want to continue on talking about some of these policy points, and then maybe we'll back up to some of the things that you mentioned, because I do want to talk about sea ice. The third is in relation to strengthening national and regional security. And I'm curious as to what's meant by that. Is it security in the sense of search and rescue in an area where we just really don't have much presence or adequate infrastructure, or does it aim more for understanding how to help people who live there adapt? Is it security as it relates to terrorism and those kinds of security concerns, or is it more about how are people going to make it in this rapid change?
I think you need to take a very broad look at the definition of security, right? Because if your house is being threatened by inundation from rising tides and diminished sea ice and bigger storms, that is a security issue for you. Also, of course, the traditional national security issues, now that we have this opening up new ocean much more of the year, what is the implication of that going to be for things like smuggling and human trafficking and so forth?
And if you,
Dr. Hirschberg,
if you look at UAA, actually has a big focus on this. We have the Arctic Domain Awareness Center, which is a collaborative with UAF, and it's funded by the Department of Homeland Security. It's a national center of excellence, and what they're really looking at is understanding risk and risk mitigation in coastal communities. So this has to do with whether you've got large shipping vessels or large passenger vessels that might be coming up the coast, or what, again, are the threats to our coastal communities from climate change or from, you know, people showing up because you can get there. So they're working to try to both build response capacity and understand better the risks themselves. And that's ADAC is one of the short panels that we have on Friday sharing the work that they are taking on in this conversation.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the future of the Arctic and who should be able to weigh in on what that future should look like as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the future of the Arctic today and also looking at a day of Arctic research that will be happening in Anchorage on Friday, bringing together state, federal, regional folks, both government officials and also traditional people and people of the Arctic who live there, together for this Arctic Day of Research that's happening on Friday. You can join our conversation if you have questions or comments about what the future of the Arctic should look like and who should be able to make those decisions. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Carolina, I wanted to ask you about this question that we were just discussing, strengthening national and regional security. When you're visiting communities in the Arctic, what do you hear about the concerns that people may have about those things?
I think, so if we take this very broad view of what strengthening means, I think there's a continuous theme of coming back to how much communities are actually involved in making decisions and how much of their input is given. So when we talk about adaptation, are communities being allowed to adapt using their traditional management, or are they just being told this is what you should be doing to adapt? When research is taking place, are they being told what the research question is, or are they involved in developing that research question? All of those things link back to security when we start to look at the different ways that we view the environment. If our Inuit communities are viewing the environment in a very holistic way, they're oftentimes asking different questions than the science might be, that it tends to be more in silos. that information from those silos gets back to communities long after a decision needs to be made, especially with rapid climate change. And so I think what we're hearing most consistently of threats to security, primarily being food security as it relates to both housing, water, social issues, ecological issues, how systems are interconnected or not interconnected, that these are not issues that are being addressed in a holistic way, or that research questions are not necessarily, it's not the dominant way of asking these research questions, and communities feeling that there needs to be more community-driven research, more community-driven involvement in the research activities, more involvement of Indigenous knowledge in the research, and inclusion of Indigenous knowledge holders in analysis of that research in order to determine what are the best ways to maintain sustainability, which might be, or support sustainability, which might be another way of looking at security.
And how would you say that has or hasn't changed? I hear that from researchers and from Indigenous people that there is growing collaboration, there's growing acknowledgement of the real science that traditional people carry with them. How would you say that's advancing, and how much more needs to be done in that regard?
I think it's advancing quite a bit, in especially the state of Alaska. It's advancing quite a bit. We tend to recognize the difference between science and Indigenous knowledge, because we do recognize Indigenous knowledge as holding its own systematic way of knowing, its own methodologies, its own analysis processes. However, maybe because it's making some advancements, then our communities are becoming louder about how that is needed. There definitely is still a power dynamic at play when we start to talk about what information is used to make decisions and who gets to decide what information is put on the table. That's not necessarily a power dynamic that's put in place by scientists, by the way. It's also on, this morning we had a teleconference about IARPC with some communities, and a community member pointed out that although many scientists have been here for many years and believe they have a structure for ethical engagement of communities, it might not actually be what the communities are considering ethical engagement, and that there needs to be much more open conversation about that and revisiting those things as things change and people assert themselves more.
Dr. Rich, I wanted to get back to you in that regard from a scientific perspective. When you and I spoke before the program this morning, you said that you've been to the Arctic, you've been to communities up there. What do you hear as a scientist dropping into these communities? What do you hear from people, and how has that changed?
I think that the communities would definitely, in a lot of cases, like to work with the research community more, and not just in terms of providing their traditional or Indigenous knowledge, but to actually be full partners in the process of creation of a research agenda, conduct of the research work, and being part of reporting out on the results. We've got a number of pilot projects that we're doing here at ARCUS. One in particular that I would mention is what we call the Sea Ice for Walrus Outlook, which brings together the hunters and elders of the Bering and Chukchi Sea regions with the International Sea Ice Prediction Network that we support and the National Weather Service to get some very localized and very short-term focused forecasts on what's the sea ice going to be like around the communities that are engaged in subsistence activities on the ice and how to do that safely.
We're going to go to the phones and take a caller. Kristen is in Anchor Point. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I was just wondering, how does the work they do here in the Arctic mesh, or if they interact with the people like down in Antarctica who are studying the melting ice shelves and the warming trends and what have you, and the changes in global climates that are taking place down there in the southern hemisphere. Are the problems the same? Are they different? And how does that happen? How do they talk to each other about these things? And how do they interact?
Excellent questions. Thank you so much for calling, Kristen. Dr. Rich, do you want to start?
Sure. So I would say that that's an excellent question. Many of the people who are studying the Arctic are also studying the Antarctic, particularly if you're talking about people who are studying things like sea ice or land ice and ice sheets and glaciers. One thing to keep in mind, which may be obvious, is that Antarctica is a very large uninhabited continent, well, except for researchers, but uninhabited for the most part, that's surrounded by an ocean. And the Arctic, of course, is an ocean surrounded by mostly inhabited land. So a lot of the dimensions of the Arctic are different than the Antarctic, but there is a lot of commonality, and so we work with both sides, both poles, when it comes to education and outreach and various activities that help to share what's going on in these places.
Dr. Hirschberg.
Sure, and certainly UAA has faculty who do work in both places, and there are studies also, you know, Antarctica is not inhabited by humans, but it is inhabited by animals. And so when you're looking at the impact of climate change on seals or on penguins and what's happening with the change in the benthic organisms underneath the sea, there are lessons to be learned on both ends. And so definitely that collaboration and conversation is happening. I think in particular of Dr. Jen Burns at UAA, who does a lot of work around the physiological stresses on seals. And she does most of that work in Antarctica, but she also is doing some of that work in the Arctic.
And can I also point out that there's a major event coming up next year called the Polar 2018 Conference, which is actually going to bring together researchers and leaders from both the Arctic and the Antarctic communities. And at that event, we're going to be organizing several panels to talk about these connections and how to strengthen them.
Where will that be held?
That will actually be held in Switzerland in 2018.
Well, we'll all have to make sure that we're there. And
absolutely.
You can join our conversation if you'd like to. We're talking about the future of the Arctic and Arctic policy. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 550-8422. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. And you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Early March usually marks the maximum sea ice extent in the Arctic. Is sea ice extent at a record low for this time of year? Dr. Rich, do you have those numbers in front of you?
I don't have the precise numbers, but I think it's close to the lowest at this time of the year, if not the lowest. One of the things we've seen in recent years is there's a lot of natural variability of sea ice levels at different times, but within that variability, you're consistently getting into the top 10 lowest sea ice extent, both at the maximum at this time of the year and then at the minimum in September.
And so what does that mean? What does that low starting point mean for sea ice loss this summer?
It could be quite tragic. It's really hard to say. The project office for this international team of researchers called the Sea Ice Prediction Network, which is looking at exactly that question, looking at what is the sea ice extent going to be 6 months from now when we get to the minimum, and really trying to improve the methodology of predicting sea ice extent and sea ice characteristics. This is a field that is maturing, but it needs a lot more investment and a lot more work because we don't really understand it completely. I mean, we can't say with a great deal of confidence what is the sea ice going to be 6 months from now.
But one of the, you know, that the issue when we're looking at this is that there are so many impacts that we're seeing, whether it's the haulouts of the walrus in places. They weren't hauling out at times, they weren't hauling out numbers, they weren't hauling out previously, or it's the unpredictability of the waves so that when hunters are going out onto the ocean, they are suddenly dealing with conditions that are far more treacherous because it's not that it hasn't always been treacherous, but that people had knowledge and this rapid change suddenly is saying, wow, we can't look back a generation, two generations, or what our elders told us and be able to respond in the same way.
ICC Alaska has visited since 2012. You've got this beautiful report compiled. Visited, I think, 15 communities, Alaskan communities, starting in 2012 and put this report together. What are you hearing from those communities? Where did you visit, and what did you hear in interviewing folks there about these very things that we're discussing now, about sea ice changes that mean changes in waves and shore fast ice and figuring out where game is going to be when you need to go out and hunt? Carolina, what are you hearing from those communities?
I think it goes back to what I was sharing before, again, about being involved in having decision-making power, having the ability to adapt using your traditional management. For example, if the waves are larger, along some areas, stratification has increased in the water column. Salinity levels have changed to increase or decrease in some areas, according to our elders. Nearshore currents are changing in some areas. Salmon are entering the mouths at different points than they had before. All of those things are connected to sea ice. But it's not only connected to sea ice coverage, it's also connected to the thickness of the sea ice. The thing here is that Inuit knowledge or Indigenous knowledge is looking at all of those things interconnected to mm-hmm. each other. So that's what I mean when I say, who is driving the research question, and is it the information the community needs to make decisions? And also what I mean when the community says, are we being allowed to adapt? So even if their grandfathers didn't know what to do with the water as it increased in wave action, they know how to adapt to that using traditional management because they're looking at it holistically. And I'll just tell you a quick story from that book that could maybe explain part of that, that we tried to explain what it means when applying a food security lens to asking these questions. Is if we talk to one of our walrus hunters, they're not going to just talk to us about walrus. They're going to talk to us about sea ice thickness, about how far off the coast they had to go, about change in the walrus behavioral ecology, which isn't just hauling out on land, but there's other changes occurring within their behavioral ecology as a result to these cumulative impacts that are occurring. But they're also going to talk to us about the change in benthic species distribution as related to that increase in stratification or increase in changes of temperature through the water column or movement through the water column, and talk to us about the stomach contents of the walrus because people depend on that to eat, and that's how they know some of those benthic species distributions are changing. At the same time, they're going to talk to us about a young boy being taken out every year to learn how to have a relationship with that walrus, to learn how to be within their environment. And when that young boy becomes old enough to catch a walrus or to hunt a walrus, he will bring back his catch and share it with an elder. And that will be the point of him becoming a provider as opposed to being provided for. And in that way, we know we have to look at both cultural questions and cultural health as much as we look at walrus health. And that is the difference between looking at those two in silos and everything in between. And it's all dependent upon sea ice and the change and shifts in the sea ice and the ability to make decisions of how you're going to react to that.
Do you hear anger from people about these rapid changes that are happening with the growing acknowledgement of humanity's role in how the climate is changing? Are people angry in the Arctic that these impacts are coming so rapidly to their way of life that they really have had no large role in creating? Is there anger, or are people just practical about we have to figure this out?
I couldn't really say for everybody in general. I can say for the people that I've personally engaged with and from what we hear at ICC in general, it's not that the change has happened, it's that the burden of conservation that is occurring as a result to it, that Inuit are the first to suffer the impacts of these change, and they're the first to be expected to change their behavior as a result to those changes. So again, if we look at things in a more holistic way of cumulative impacts and talk about sea ice, why aren't we concentrating more on polluter pay policies, concentrating more on decreasing greenhouse gas, concentrating more on shutting air conditioners off down south, right? than a walrus hunter not being able to provide for his family.
Hmm. Did you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, one of the pieces I I had a little in my input when they were having public input into the IARPIC plan, because I'm not a part of one of the entities that was writing it, was there isn't a role formally for education or human capital development. And this is actually a complaint I have about much of the Arctic research community, is that they look at education as the thing we do to create more scientists, that we're going to do some STEM, you know, we're going to focus on STEM research so that we get young people to do that work. And that's important. But what we're missing is building the capacity of young people to take active roles in governance, and to be able to perhaps have a law degree so they have the piece of paper that lets them go and make that argument for their community. And of course, that also speaks to the problem that we have a Western education system that isn't always helping young people make it all the way to that position. And I think that's another conversation, certainly, that ICC Alaska is leading in this state. But I think that's the other piece when we think about sea ice, is we also think about what is the governance role, what are the governance rights of Indigenous people to actually say, no, this needs to change, that the hunting regulations make no sense when the ducks show up a month earlier.
Is some of that being more incorporated, you know, if you want to attract young Inuit people to science roles, to help shape policy in the future, is the traditional knowledge that they bring with them or their elders have worked with them to understand, is that being incorporated more into how people are engaging with science and how people are being trained in science to kind of react to what Carolina has raised, which is a lot of times in the past, scientists have kind of shown up with preconceived notions about, well, here's what we're going to figure out and we'll let you know when we find out. Is that being better brought together? Or Dr. Rich, maybe you can respond to that.
Yeah, I think it's really important to engage the Arctic communities and Indigenous communities in the effort of research. We have one activity we started last year, which is called the Arctic in the Classroom, which is basically connecting educators in remote Alaska villages with the research teams that might be working in the proximity of those villages, so that the teachers can serve as a go-between and a way to engage both the students of those teachers and the broader members of that community in the kind of research that's being done. So it's not, again, it's not just about the scientists coming in and doing some research and leaving. It's about working together with the community to figure out what the research agenda should be, and then making sure that as the research is going on, the community is a part of it, and when the research is completed, that it's reported back out to those communities.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss the future of the Arctic as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Anchorage and Fairbanks to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the future of the Arctic today. I wanted to get back to the policy areas in the five-year Arctic plan, the IARPIC, Interagency Arctic Research Policy Committee. There's four policy objectives, nine research goals. The fourth policy initiative for the five-year plan is improve understanding of the Arctic as a component of Earth. In the open, I said that the Arctic is the Earth's atmosphere, and Caroline has been talking about, you know, this holistic approach. Is that what we're talking about here? What's meant by improve understanding of the Arctic as a component of Earth? Please help us understand that.
Well, I think that this relates to the woman's question also of how much is related Arctic and Antarctic research. There's a lot of policy that is surrounded Antarctica that we definitely are trying to learn from in applying to the Arctic of how these different countries are able to work together and make decisions together. Also mentioning before burden of conservation of where are the results heading. This is a fantastic policy point for the IARPIC to have because it really recognizes that between the Arctic and Antarctic, we have two baseball caps that are keeping the world alive. And not a lot of people in the world recognize that, the significance of what that means.
Mm-hmm. When you look at changing climate patterns and drought or giant snowstorms smacking the East Coast, they look at that and say, well, look, we don't have global warming anymore. We're looking at that and saying, no, your weather patterns are shifting in ways that you can't predict because of the disruptions happening in the Arctic. And, you know, I haven't made it to the Florida Keys yet, and I really keep thinking I need to get down there because it's going to be underwater a lot sooner than we know. And I think that's really important. The other piece, which is not the IARPIC focus so much, but reflecting on that statement in light of the Arctic Council, is the Arctic Council has been the place where Russia and Canada and the U.S. have had strong collaborations and we're hopefully passing a scientific cooperation agreement that sort of despite some of the other difficulties that we're having in international relations, people recognize that the Arctic needs to be it needs to be a place where the diplomatic and policy conversation is different because we have a shared interest that if we blow this, we really do affect the health and well-being of the entire globe.
Dr. Rich, Robert Rich is at ARCUS. He's on the phone with us. You're in Washington, D.C. How difficult is that conversation becoming internationally now with the new tensions with Russia?
I think it's really actually not as bad as you might think. The Russians have been incredibly cooperative when it comes to the Arctic region. We have seen actually one of the things the Arctic Council is going to be doing at its meeting in Fairbanks in, later on this year is to sign an international agreement that's legally binding on scientific research cooperation in the Arctic. And the Russians were full champions of that activity and will be very happy to sign on to that. And I think that will really help to break down a lot of the barriers and hopefully advance the common understanding that all of humanity needs to really understand this changing system.
And Carolina, as we've been discussing this idea of who should make the decisions for the future of the Arctic, what do people in the Arctic, when you visit these communities and talk to people who live the life, they are there every day and have been for thousands of years and will continue to be there. What do they say about what they want their role to be in making these decisions for the future and their understanding of how much weight they do or don't have in, as far as helping to shape policy?
I think it really depends on what platform we're talking about. So where we're sitting really depends on how much people have a say of what is going to happen. So, for example, I'll jump to another platform, to the High Seas Agreement, the Arctic High Seas Agreement. And although Inuit weren't Inuit representation, Canada, Greenland, and the United States all put Inuit as part of their delegation through multiple policy and scientific meetings. And even in the language that they have now, that there is just a draft, it's recognition of the importance of Indigenous knowledge to be used along with science. So I think in communities, what we hear across Inuit countries from Chukotka to Greenland is the need for us to be moving towards a co-production of knowledge. That means from initiation to output, that we are involved in every single step of it, as is appropriate. So that doesn't mean Indigenous knowledge is always involved. Sometimes it's just science that's needed to answer a question, and sometimes it's just IK. But we have to move even past the part of analysis and output to policy. How do we get the right decisions or the right information affecting policy? And that, again, is both science and IK.
So we talk a lot about we need to get to a certain place, but there's this sense of urgency because of this rapid change. Are we getting there? I've got three experts here in the studio and on the phone. What's your level of comfort about how quickly this is being addressed? We can't get funding for icebreakers. There's not much presence in the Arctic for the Coast Guard and for a place, really, infrastructure for people to really be in place and do this research. Is it happening as fast as it should be?
I would say that we may be becoming very dependent on our European and Russian colleagues to respond as quickly as we need to be responding to right now. And, you know, there's some concern about proposed large cuts to scientific agencies and to research budgets within the United States. And if those cuts go through, then it becomes reliance on the Nordic Council of Ministers and on the Russian Ministry of Science, which is not good because we need to be equal collaborators. You know, the Canadian research enterprise has picked back up under their new leadership, and we were very excited about new collaborative opportunities there. But Canadian funding won't support the salaries of U.S. faculty. And so, again, if we want to all be part of this picture, we really need to be having investments come from within the U.S. as well as in these other countries. So there's a lot of good work happening, but I think the unmet need is much larger than the research that's happening right now.
And Dr. Rich, we have like about a minute left. Your final thoughts about what's needed here, and are we meeting this urgent need quickly enough?
I agree with Diane. The U.S. has historically been a very important leader in the world's Arctic research, but I feel that very much under threat these days. And, you know, we need to invest in this research. We need to conduct this research. We can't leave it to the Russians and the Europeans and the Canadians. It just isn't going to serve our interests, either Alaskans or people around the world.
And do you feel that that's being heard on the federal side in the U.S.?
We work very hard to try to get the message out that that Arctic research is incredibly important and that it meets the needs of our nation and the world to conduct this research. I hope it's being heard, but you know, we can use all the help we can get.
All right. Well, thank you so much to all three of you. My guests today have been Diane Hirschberg, who works for the Institute of Social and Economic Research here at UAA. Carolina Behe is a science advisor with ICC Alaska. And Robert Rich, ARCUS executive director by phone from Washington, D.C. Thanks to you for joining us. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.